Mr. O'Sullivan, Relay it in. Right, Mr. O'Sullivan, we're talking about your movement out of Stalag 4B, and you were loaded on this trailer. About how many men were on the trailer?
Well, as you say, altogether there'd be 44.
And did you know where you were going?
No. We had no idea where we were going.
Did you have any ideas, any thoughts?
Well, we knew we were going to work. We knew we were going into our working area. We thought we were all going together. But we didn't.
And so what happened?
Well, I don't know how far Paul V is from Schmiedeberg, but we carried on this truck. So we were on the truck itself. Me and Johnny Eileen, it was about 20 more boats, 24 boats maybe, and behind in the trailer was some other boats. And we drove to this place, which we later found out to be Bad Schmiedeberg. And the driver got out of the wagon and he said, "They got us all off. He wanted 20 men." And he just went, he just counted 20 off that way. Anybody else was off back on the truck. We had very little kit between us to take off. We, more or less what we stood up in. Someone went bits of parcels with them. Someone went even had Dixies with them. Some had knives and forks. But that's all he did. He just counted 20 men. Everybody else back on the trucks, and there was no chance of sorting yourselves out into mates and that. If you were unfortunate enough to be separated from your mate, that happened.
So there would have been probably some people on the truck.
Oh, we're mates. Yeah, we were friends. And some got off. It was some got off that trailer, some got off the wagon, and once he had his 20 men, though some was off the wagon and some was off the trailer. Well, if you'd been on the trailer with your mate and he was a bit slow getting off, you had to get back on again.
So did you, both you and Johnny Eilly?
Me and Johnny Eilly, we was at the back of the, as it happened, we were at the back of the truck. And we was nearly the first two off. And that's how we did it. There was no choice of anything.
Now, what kind of place was Bad Schmiedeberg, just from your first impression as you...
Well, it just looked like a small village. There was one large chimney in the village itself, but otherwise it was just like an ordinary, just an English village, a small place.
Now, you got off the truck and the trailer, what happened then?
Then we went into it looked like an old farmhouse, which in fact it really was an old farmhouse. We went into this building, which was inside was a stove, some bunk beds, but they were large bunk beds. They were just like big shelves, and there was four big shelves, one and then one above it, and on the other side room the same again. And on it there was palliatives, but they weren't filled. There were just the carcasses. And there was a stove which wasn't lit. I can't remember if it was particularly cold, but the first thing we wanted was, and they gave us briquettes to light the stove with, but no, we had to go out and find some wood because the briquettes, there was coal and concrete mixed together. We got it going eventually. And it was like, my father had something similar to it down in the allotment for cooking pigs for him. And that was it. We sorted ourselves out. We went to different.
Now you got to this. You got into this hut. That first night, how did the German authorities, who was there to meet you and to sort you out?
There was a sergeant major from the Wehrmacht. There was the assistant mayor, Bürgermeister. He was the assistant. They called him. We found out later they called him Friedel or Friedel. Yeah, he was a shopkeeper. And Winnie, who was the foreman at the steelworks, at the that, which we found out later was Brickworks, and the manager of the Brickworks. And we'd, well, they said we were going to work for a night, and we were just, I don't know, wondering what was going to happen to us. We knew it was on, it was having to go to work, but we didn't know how loud we had to go to work.
What was the Germans' attitude towards you?
They thought we was well, they thought they were still winning the war. Well, then there was another little war here. What the hell did they go on in? I can't think of his name. I'm not seeing a real little bit. Oh, it was Ernst. Ernst. And he was the foreman for the local council. And it worked out that there was so many men was going to work at the stand at the brickworks, and so many men was going to work for the stat, and somebody, and the people on the stat would be split into different groups there. Anyway, that night we got some food provided by Mrs. Frau Friedel. And the who kept the small shop in the village. It was silk with barley in it, pearl barley. It was not a lot of taste, but it was thickish, and some black bread.
Had you had black bread before?
No.
What did you think of it?
Terrible. I've got some more. It was terrible. Well, oh, and coffee. Ersatz coffee.
What was that like?
Well, it was a drink, and that's all you could say about it. It was very good. We drink. Someone had tea with them. Some of the lads had some tea. And when we got the fight, when we made a brew of tea, and if anybody had any tea, it was shared with more milk. When we bedded down for the night with it, we met the postman, the guard. He was a bloke about 5'11", 5'10", 5'11". But the most noticeable thing about him, he had glasses on, which was like bottoms of milk bottles, very, very thick. And he was more like our own guard. That was his attitude as well. He wasn't smart in any way. That was his attitude.
Can you remember his name?
No, I can't. No, and I spent a lot of time with him. Anyway, they showed us where we were going to sleep, and the coalman, who was apparently his house had joined us, the room he was in, he took five men. And they went to fill the palaces at the farmyard. And I think I wasn't on that detail. Phil Carrick was on it, he was always on it for filling palaces, was Phil. We had one where Jim Britton wasn't very well. You know, he was a big lad. So I think we thought, well, it'll work out. But, you know, we went. And we just locked in this room at night.
And where was the guard?
The guard wanted locked the comp. In front of this room was a compound of about 9 yards maybe. Put wire in front of it. Where the yard, I think about 9 yards would be 12 yards. In front of it, there was an outside toilet. And inside there was a steel barrel. That was the night toilet. And that it was locked in, and the guard slept in the front of on the high street, in the part, I think it was another part of the farmhouse where he lived.
So there was 20 of you in this
room, yeah.
About how big was the room?
I think in the area, it was about as big as this room here.
Which is what? In yards?
It's only about 4 yards across, but this room was more square. It would be maybe 7 yards by 7 yards, something like that.
Now, so that was your first night. What happened the next morning?
Well, the next morning at 6 o'clock, the guard come in and woke everybody up. And we marched down to this brickworks. All of us, all 24 of us. And we were filling big lorries with sand. And that's the first time I've come across the continental shovel with the long handle. We had to fill so many of these wagons. And the first day we filled about. We was working two, maybe two men, three men, two big lorries, big lorries with high sides. Because I found that I could just, with the throw of a shovel, I could just get it into the wagon. And this went on for 2 or 3 days filling these. That's all we did all day long. In the second morning, the postman said to us, "If you fill so many wagons, that's it, you can go home." So someone, Benny Lewis was one, decided, well, I'll get the bloody job done. So they said, I don't know how many wagons we had to fill, but they said we had to fill 3 wagons each, 3 men each, and then go back to the lager. I was with Jim Britton, and Jim said, "No, we're not rushing. Take your time. If we're here about 4 o'clock, we're here about 4 o'clock. It don't make any difference because there's bugger all to do at the lager." He said, "If I know what about these with the Germans, we want 5 wagons tomorrow before we go out to the lager." And that's what happened. And then on the Sunday, we didn't have to go to work on the Sunday, and you couldn't go out on the Sunday. You could only go into the compound in the. We got to know each other better. But on the Monday morning, this little Ernst come back again. And he wanted 6 men for the stat.
What's the stat?
The council. So he picked Johnny Eiley, me, Ray Smith, Georgie Gent, Phil Carrick, Frankie Rolfe. Which picked out for this stat, and then two more people come up. One from a woodyard. One was a bit of an engineer, and he wanted men to work for him. So Frankie Rolfe was dropped off the stat group and went to work with it in the woodyard, and Phil Garbutt went to work with this engineer. And then somebody else came, and he took the little fellow, Alfie Garbutt, and Ned Chamberlain, to work with them. I never did find out what the hell they did. And all the others finished up at the brickyard.
Have they quizzed you on what your skills were?
Yeah, but we already decided that we weren't going to have any skills.
So what it, this was it?
Dickie Dunstead. That's another thing we did on the first day. We decided who was going to represent us, you know, with the Germans. Dickie Dunstead was a Lance Corporal. And he was the only one with a stripe up while we was there. So we decided that Dickie could represent us. And he did, and he did quite well. But I think when we got to working, Ben and Lewis more or less represented the blokes when they was in the brickyard.
That was the men that were at the brickyard.
All the men who worked in the brickyard. Dickie Dunstead worked in the brickyard, shouldn't he? He did. But Benny was sort of foreman. Dickie represented us as a group, but I think Benny was, I don't know, mind you, because I never worked in the brickyard, not making bricks. I think Benny was foreman down there, over the English lads.
Now, I know you had your photograph taken as a group later in the war, but I thought what we might do now is possibly go over the caption that you put to that photograph so that we get an idea of who these men are and, you know, who these men were and you know, what you're going to remember about where they were from, and then continue from there. So this is the caption that you've put together, Mr. O'Sullivan, and maybe if we could just go through a list of names from the back row first.
Well, Evans was a guardsman.
And where was he from?
He was a Welshman. Where he was from, I don't know where he came from in Wales. Sangster.
He joined later.
He wasn't particularly well liked. I don't know where he came from, Sangster. And there was Roberts. Roberts came with to us. The Sangster, Price and Roberts came in later. But Price wasn't with us at the offset.
Can you remember any of the regiments of the men?
No, I can't really.
And then there's yourself.
Then there's me. Then there's Chambers. Chamberlain, we called him that, didn't they? We called him Chambers. Jock.
He was a Scotchman.
He was a Scotchman, all right. Then there was Bill Woolley.
Where was he from?
He come from, I don't know what mob he was in, but he come from London. He lived in, I went to see him after the bloody war, didn't he?
Was he a southerner or a northerner?
No, he come from, he lived in London. Anyway, we'll come back to that while I'm never thinking about it. And there was Garbutt, he was a bit of a comedian.
Where was he from?
He was a southerner. And then there was Thomas Tunney from up north. Phil Carrick from Manchester area, as was Joe Washington. Joe Washington and Phil Carrick were round about Manchester area. I don't think Joe was from that Manchester itself, but he was in that. And then there was Dickie Dunster. From Red Roofs in Cornwall. I don't know who he is. Green. And he was covered with boils. He really was, he was terrible. And he was an Irishman.
Even at this stage he was
ill? Yeah, still he was suffering with boils. Benny Lewis, another Welshman. What struck me about the Welshman was that Evans, Lewis, and no, not him. Who's the other one? Oh, he's not on the photograph. The one I've been working with, Jim Britton, they were friends. They were Welsh, but this other Welshman, Davis, was disliked for he was a. If they were southern, say they were from South Wales, it was North Wales, and they really didn't get on. And then there's Tony Mitchell, he was the only professional soldier in the group.
What regiment was he?
I can't remember the regiment, so was in. And then there was Akers. Granger was RAF Seawaller, as was Chamberlain. He was in the service corps. And he was the mate of Chamberlain. There was the only two blokes who was mates for any length of time, you know, had been mates any length of time.
So they knew each other before they got to the camp?
Yeah, but they knew each other in Italy. Georgie Gent, he was a plasterer on the London Underground. He worked on the London Underground as a plasterer. Rolf come from somewhere in Norfolk, I think. And Davis, he was another Welshman. Davis. And Johnny Arley.
And where was Arley from?
I think Johnny Arley came from Ipswich, Wales. And Big Jim Britton, what, he's not on the photograph, is he?
And there was 20 of those men were with you.
At the outset, you know.
Yeah. So, so you were a pretty mixed bunch.
Very mixed. With three Welshmen, one half Irish, one Scot, one lost.
So those were the men that you were with, and at this stage you only knew Johnny Arley.
Johnny Arley was the only one I knew. I didn't know Johnny Arley, but I met him in 4B.
So how did you get on with each other at this early stage?
We did fairly well. We had one little confrontation, that was with Davis. He was Davy rather than the little Welshman.
That's Davy rather than Davy.
He was the only one who had a collar and tie, actually. He made his collar and tie out of a shirt tail. He was a tailor in Silver Street. I mean, he rubbed people the wrong way, even when we first got there.
What did he do?
He wasn't sure that Dickie Dunn was Dickie Dunn's. I'll call him Dickie Dunn because we always refer to him as Dickie Dunn.
And that's Dickie Dunn Dunster, but that's the nickname.
Yeah, the proper name, but we always called him Dickie Dunn. I think Dave would have liked to have been. He didn't think Dickie Dunn was the right man for the job as a junior rep. But really, he hadn't got to do it, Dickie Dunn. He just referred to. He liked that of a committee. We didn't do what Dickie told us to do, but we talked about what we were going to do and what we decided to do. But we got on well together. And Jock was one of the good mixers. For saying we was 20 men thrown together, we got on fairly well.
So you're in this hut, you'd loaded up these wagons, some of the men had been sent to the brickyard, you'd been put on the stat. What was your daily routine?
On the stat was, first of all, we made sure the streets...
No, but earlier, you know, take us through from the very first, you know, from waking up on a morning in the hut, what would actually happen from then on, and what time would that be?
Well, the stat men used to have to be at the brickyard men had to be at, they was for 7, they'd be up at 6, if they'd any breakfast, if they'd any tea out of their own coffee, they'd make a drink. If they'd had anything to eat, which was unusual if they had in the morning, because they usually used to eat up at night. And then they would warm up outside, and they would be marched by the postman to the brick company. Then the postman would come back, and they would take Johnny Eiley and Ray Smith, who was on the stat that they worked at a bathhouse. They would take them to the bathhouse. Then Otto Norman, who was the foreman on the... And this would happen between 6:30 and 7:30. Otto Norman would come from the stat and he would pick up me, Phil Carrick, George Gent, and we'd go down and work. So we'd maybe work in the streets, sweeping the streets, we'd maybe be digging dikes out. We never went on... If we was going to work out in, we sometimes went to work out in the forest, cutting timber. We never felled trees, but we cut up trees what was dead, what was laid on the ground. They was cut up. We always borrowed the horseman cart from the corner. We did all sorts of jobs in the stack. We used to move. Civilians work for the staff as well. I called other than that. There's two men worked, apart from Otto Norman, who was a foreman. There's some more men who worked on the stat, but they didn't always work with us. But we was always with Otto Norman.
What kind of man was he?
We was very lucky with Otto. He'd been a prisoner of war in the previous war, in England, and he'd been well treated. And he treated us as well as he could. Where the lads at the Vicworks were unfortunate, because their foreman, who was called Wingy because he'd lost an arm, he was a prisoner of war in England during the Great War, and he lost his arm, and he always said they took it off needlessly. He sort of blamed the being a POW in England, that he lost his arm, and he always blamed them for it. So he wasn't very happy with the POW situation. And I think they suffered for it sometimes down at the brickworks. But we were very fortunate. Otto Norman had been a POW and been retreating in England. So it reflected on us. and we got the benefit of it. But we worked all over. Sometimes we'd be stood in dikes, cleaning the bottom of the dike out and throwing it up on the bank in the water, you know. And another day we'd be chopping firewood for the council offices, or, no, they didn't call them council offices, but that's what we called them. Sawing logs up, sawing these trees up. Sometimes we did the building work. The first air raid shelter we built, we worked on it, mixing cement and concrete. But they didn't build it as a air raid shelter, they built it as a vegetable store place, which could be used as an air raid shelter if it was. But they never really thought they would get bombed.
You were at these various activities. Would there be would you have a break at midday, or would you work?
A break at midday.
We always
had a break at midday, and usually it would be at one of the council yards. If Otto would bring his pack up with him, same as we would take pack up, you know, in England, wouldn't we? Well, Otto used to bring his, and they'd bring it. We'd make a coffee, because we always had a burner, a brazier, and we always had plenty of wood. Because we used to nearly always go to along with the wood yard, which belonged to the council. And we used to burn the chickens. And Otto nearly always brought it. We'd have a cup of coffee with him. He hadn't enough food of his own to share with us. You know, sometimes he'd be half a sandwich between us. But we always had a hot drink at dinner time.
And then you would work on until what time?
Until 4 or 5 o'clock. If we were doing a job that had to be finished, it was finished. There was no hard and fast time rules. We thought, all said, yeah, we want to get this done. But we found out later, when we first started, we used to slow down. And then Otto used to say, well, if we was cleaning a canal, a dike out, Otto would have, he knew where he was supposed to be at 5 o'clock. And Otto got as wise as we did. He used to say, well, we're going to work to this area, we're finishing here. He said, if we're not here by 5, well, we'll be here by 6. So, we got so we could work with him.
Could he speak English?
He could speak English the same as we could speak German. He'd learnt English in England as a prisoner of war. And we could talk to each other. It was a mixture of both languages. And if we couldn't, you could always... The Germans, same as I do, and now they speak with their hands. They wave their hands about to work. We could get on to each other.
How long did it take you before you could do basic conversations?
A couple of months, obviously. Maybe a bit longer than that. And some of them picked it up quicker than others.
Could any of you speak German before?
No.
Now, so that was your work day. About what time would you finish?
Around about 5 o'clock. At this point, Phil Carrick went to work with Mrs. Price.
And it was Mrs. Price?
The woman who did the cooking. They started doing the cooking in the village at the Rat's Cellar.
What was the Rat's Cellar?
The Rat's Cellar would be a cafe, but it was closed down, obviously. So they owned the Rat's Cellar, and that's where the cooking was done for us. And Phil Carrick first went to work with Mrs. Price. He used to leave. He used to go out after dinner. He would go to Mrs. Price to work to prepare our grub. And when the lads left the brickyard, they would come up to the Rat's Cellar and they'd put the handcart up with the containers of food on, and they'd bring that to the larder. And the next morning, when they went to the brickyard, they took the empty containers back to the Rat's Cellar.